Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Welcome into At The Podium. This is episode 18.5, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. Today, we have our usual press conferences from the coordinators, starting with defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz. He praised the Eagles' defense in their 16-15 win over the Chicago Bears in the wildcard round and went into detail about how Malcolm Jenkins, Nigel Bradham, and Craven LeBlanc helped them limit the Bears' best weapon in Tariq Cohen. Plus, there's some praise for Rasul Douglas, who has gotten a lot of love on this network, and deservedly so. He also talks about the upcoming battle with the Saints offense that gashed the Eagles in the regular season and what he needs to do to prevent that from being a sequel. Next up is offensive coordinator Mike Groh. Of course, he is asked about Nick Foles, along with the whole Foles-Wentz dynamic, as he is every time. He also shed some light on the decision-making when it comes to the running back group and their snap share. So tons of information in these press conferences as we gear up towards the divisional round matchup with the Saints, and we'll be covering it from every angle here at Bleeding Green Nation. So keep an eye out for the usual rack of preview shows, plus some special guests will be appearing on this feed this week. But that is coming up later in the week. Right now, we're going to go to the podium.
Game plan away. How do you slow Drew Brees? And if you look at the numbers, he's always been historically good against the Blitz.
I think you got to mix it up. You have to tackle well. There's some things that you can't defend every single pass. If you do, you're going to give up, you know, too many plays down the field. And I think there's some that you just have to tackle. There's others that you have to pick and choose your times to be aggressive. I don't know that this is a game that you can just stick with one thing and stay with it over the course of the game. He's seen just about everything known to mankind. He has good playmakers at all the different positions. There's picking and choosing times. There's sometimes where you've got to play zone. Sometimes you got to play man. Bottom line is you got to defend, you got to tackle, you got to keep the mistakes down.
Jim, last 4 games, you've held opposing running backs to under 2.5 yards per carry. What's been the difference there compared to the rest of the year?
I think that, you know, when you talk about run defense, people generally talk about the front seven and, you know, their ability, but it's layered well beyond that. It is the front seven. It's every man knowing their job. It's finishing tackling. One guy missing a tackle can make a whole scheme look bad, can make 10 other players look bad. Most of tackling, like I've said before, has to do with positioning and knowing where your teammates are, where you fit in the scheme. And I think over the sort of the second half of the season, I'd say the guys have settled into that. And I think you're seeing those guys knowing where where they are, and it's resulted in better tackling. Our secondary has tackled better. Our front seven, we've always relied on those guys, but everybody knowing their role within it, you know, that's something that's developed over the last half of the season.
You spoke last week about how much of a threat Cohen was on defense. What you guys do to bottle him up?
Well, most of that credit goes to Nigel Bradham and Malcolm Jenkins. You know, they had a huge hand in that. And I can't say enough about how those guys played because, even the one play that he went down the field, that was neither of those guys' coverage. But it wasn't just stopping the pass. It was stopping the run. Some of the pass, we were treating him like he was a wide receiver, and that went to Craven. And Craven's another one of those guys that, you know, has really stepped up for us. I don't know. I said before, I don't know where we'd be without Avante. I don't know where we'd be without Cray. You know, our scouts, sort of midway through the season, Joe Douglas came to me and said, you know, hey, look, there's this guy that just became available, and our scouts got some good feel for him. You know, and guys like Howie and Joe, you know, they're sort of up front, and you guys get a lot of those. But some of those guys that work in those back rooms, you know, without a light, without a window and stuff like that, and they're pouring over all these, you know, guys that get cut or go somewhere else. Well, that was, you know, that might have been the key to our season, you know, putting a waiver claim in on I'd never heard of Craven LeBlanc before. And they brought him and said, hey, we're thinking about claiming this guy. And it was right before Saints game last time we were able to plick him in. But he had his times also. It wasn't all just Nigel and Malcolm. Cray had a big part of it, and it was a team effort to try to keep him down. We knew how dangerous he was. You could see that on the last kickoff. That's a guy that you give him a quarter of an inch, or one guy misses a tackle, and he can make you pay. And I was proud of the guys the way they played against him.
When you looked at Craven, I guess on tape before he got here, as you guys were signing him, what did you see, and then was that what you got on the field when he got here?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't look very much. You know, those guys did all the heavy lifting on that. You know, and we had played against them last year. My exposure was only watching our game against Chicago last year and watching them against guys like Alshon. And if you remember, they were down significantly in that game. And I think it was Alshon that called a ball. Maybe it was Nelly, and he went hustling down and caused a fumble around the goal line. You know, when the game was sort of out of hand and everything, you could tell what a competitor he was. But, you know, honestly, coaches really had very little to do with that. That was our scouting staff, and you know, particularly some of those pro scouts that, you know, aren't guys that are up on podiums a lot of times. And, you know, we owe a lot of our season to that.
Jim, in a situation like that, when he got here, when Cray got here, how long did it take till you saw, you know, a practice or a game that you had something you could really work with?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take long to be around that guy to know that he's competitive and he's tough. You know, it took a little bit. He wasn't a rookie. So a lot of times with those guys, it's just a matter of getting his terminology up to date and things like that. You know, so it was sort of by necessity. He needed to get up to speed quickly, but he was up for the test. He's played some outside corner for us too. You know, I don't know that we win that Giants game if he can't step in and play outside corner, which was a position that he had hardly ever played, and he had not practiced for us. But competitiveness and toughness go a long way, and he brings both of those.
As bad as that first game against the Saints was, I mean, obviously you guys had a ton of injuries, like even during the game and everything. Like, what can you kind of take out of that to help you in this game?
You know, I think there's a lot. I think that going forward, you know, when it's all said and done, we can pull some positives from it. There were some good plays in there that were hard to find, but there were some good plays, and our guys can gain a little bit of confidence in, hey, we can get this done. It also shows you how, you know, one play here and there, the tide can turn really quickly in this league and provide that urgency. You know, when it's all said and done, neither team's going to start this game with a lead. Neither team's going to start with an advantage because of something that happened. Man, it seems like another season ago, at least to us. But, you know, each game's going to start out new. And we're going to have to play good for 60 minutes in this game, not make up for anything that happened 8 weeks ago, and not, you know, not get down about anything that happened. It's been 8 weeks. I don't even.
Seven.
Okay. Yeah. Seven games. 8 weeks. Whatever it is.
In that game, you blitzed more than you blitzed all season.
Which one?
The first Saints game.
Really?
I think it was your highest percentage of blitzes.
Yeah.
What went into that, and was it exacerbated by the injuries in the script of the game?
Yeah, you know, I don't know who comes up with those stats. I don't know that I would say that all those were. I don't know that that would be 100% accurate. We've had some other games, I think, that our blitz percentage has been higher. Yeah, Jaguars in particular. That was a heavy dose. Every game's different. Every game comes off a little bit different. Like, this last game against Chicago, there was a one short yardage play that we blitzed until the last three plays of the game, just trying to keep it to be a long field goal. The rest of that game, there were zero blitzes, and I mean, there was the one short yardage. So anyway, so every game's a little bit different. Every game will play out a little bit different. Again, what we did, what happened in that game is really going to have no bearing on how we play in this one and how they play in this one. It's going to be determined by the players that are on the field now, how well we execute, how well we tackle, how well, we adjust to what they're doing. Yes, ma'am.
When you left there November 18th, was there any thought in your mind that you could be back there playing them again, or was that the farthest thought from your mind?
I don't know if it's the farthest thought from your mind. I mean, you know, when you're in the moment like that, you're just worried about, like, the next game and trying to bounce back for the next game and trying to say, okay, this is what we're faced with. This is, these are the injuries we have. This is the next opponent. This is what we need to do to win this next game. I don't think you ever look that far ahead. But I will say this, if you do a good job of staying in the moment and saying, okay, who's our next opponent? How can we execute against them? What do we have to do this week? And we can go put a winning performance together. If you do that for long enough, then you end up back in that position. And that's where we are. And I think one of the biggest things is just such a credit to the players. It's tough. I mean, it's a tough business. And, when you get beat the way we did, it's easy to play in the negativity. It's easy to get down. But our guys got more determined, I think, and our guys stayed positive, and we were able to, have some good results and make it back here or make it back there. So, I mean, Timmy meant an awful lot to us last year, and, he's been obviously missed most of the season, but getting him back, first there's a component of him as a player. And he's a good player. And second component is he's healthier. So I think that goes in. And then the third is something you really can't put your finger on. He means something to our spirit. He's a guy that has a little bit of contagious energy. You just see him out on the field. He brings a confidence. He brings a toughness. Has made some big plays for us.
How persuasive can Malcolm be when he's trying to convey what he wants to do? I think when he spoke about when you first got here, you had feelings about how you like to use your safeties, and he had been playing the previous way in the previous scheme. How can he be forthright in that way?
I don't know. Malcolm has always been really good at trying to execute whatever we've tried to play to the best of his ability. He's never been stubborn about playing a certain way, playing here. I mean, he can play just about every single position. He also has a lot of experience, and he's a good barometer of where we are on the field. One of the reasons I like to call defenses from the sideline and not up in the box is I don't like the isolation of the box. I like looking guys in the eye, and there's a lot of times when you say, hey, can you get a guy covered? And a guy can say yes, but you just feel like, okay, he needs a little bit of help, or, vice versa. And Malcolm is really good at that. He's a great guy to get a feel for how things are going. He can feel not just himself, but the rest of the team. And it makes it easy to make adjustments when you're getting that kind of information. I think that's probably, is that where you're going?
The Giants game, for instance, 2 years ago when just decided to go with an extra defender. I think he said he suggested that. There was a game earlier this year. I think he felt like something needed to change, and he suggested that. I'm just wondering if that's
– Yeah.
Maybe persuasive is not the word, but
– Yeah, I'm always open. I'm always open to suggestions. I think the big thing is just mutual respect that goes back. I mean, he's not a rookie. He's been through a lot of things. He knows the defense – from A to Z. He knows not just his position, but he knows the other positions. And again, having feedback from guys that are on the field that, sometimes it's different when you're on the sideline. Sometimes it's different when you're in the booth. You don't really, get a feel. And I think the one thing you're referring to this year is against, I think it was the Giants, when, the guys were just a little bit behind all the calls. and just said, you know, hey, look, we just need it quicker, not meaning the call quicker, but we just need to be able to communicate quicker. So we eliminated some things and eliminated some layers of the defense. That's great information. And we have a lot of respect for his ability to give us that information. And it's had a lot to do with putting some fires out over the course of the year.
How much of that was just that the rock started rolling downhill on y'all early and turning that thing around was just probably not going to happen that day? And how does that play into, obviously you always want to start well, but that's an obvious point, but how does that play into how you're thinking about this game this time?
Yeah, you know, every game you can point to like a bunch of really small turning points. You know, again, take us back, the Chicago game. You know, like everybody thinks about that game is going to think about that missed field goal. And I will say this as a competitor, and I don't know Cody really well, but he was here for just a couple months when I first came here. One regret I have in that game is I was so busy, like, being excited and celebrating the win. I never got a chance to go tell him how much I respect him and how much I respect that you live in that kind of fishbowl. You know, and again, I'm super happy that we won and everything else. But I don't think there's a competitor out there that doesn't know what that's like. You know, I've been the victim of one that ricocheted off one, ricocheted off the other. It wasn't the crossbar and went in. You know, and you realize like how much of a game of inches that is. And you know, everybody on that field, whether it was Nigel Bradham, I mean, he made a mistake on a third down and 11 play, got too wide in his own coverage. They got a first down, were able to keep their drive alive. Whether it was a dropped interception, whether it was, you know, Fletch, you know, probably had a play here or there. You know, that kid has one play that's on display for everybody, and he misses it by inches. That's the pressure those guys live through. It's pressure that all our players go through, but more so for those guys. Anyway, how did I get on that soapbox?
The early start.
Oh, yeah. No, what I'm saying is there are, you know, everybody recognizes the play at the end, but there's probably a dozen plays in there that you say, wow, if this play had gone different, man, maybe it wouldn't have rolled downhill. Maybe if we made that interception or we had made that sack or we didn't get this penalty or we hadn't missed this tackle, you know, maybe that play's different. We got that third down stop if our offense had scored. So we all live in that world as players and coaches. We understand how close the margins are and things like that. And it's not just the plays at the end that mean something. It's the plays within. And I think there's a lot that we can learn and a lot that we can, you know, also gain confidence from that first game.
You used a lot of dime with the three safeties against the Bears. Just what do you like about that personnel grouping? What does it give you guys?
Well, you need a flexible guy like Malcolm that can play linebacker slash safety slash nickel. That goes a lot into it. And it just helps to be able to match up different personnels. You know, we use not just dime, but we use, like you said, a three safety nickel at times. We use base personnel. We used about every different personnel you could imagine, all of them with a little different thought in mind and all of them with a little different personnel matchups in mind. You need multidimensional players, and I think that, you know, you can probably start with a guy like Malcolm. Corey Graham means a lot to us there, too.
You mentioned it's a field goal. How much has Hester given you as part of the rotation of the defensive line?
Yeah, it just shows you, again, those little tiny things, you know, the fingertip can make all the difference between this being an end of the season wrap-up and continuing to play. But, you know, Trey's come up big for us. That was another pickup by our scouts. You know, he was on practice squad. We had a lot of injuries. You know, the one thing with all the notice of our secondary and where they were injury wise, we were in a tough spot defensive tackle wise for a while too. But you know, Haloti getting healthy, getting Timmy back, like we just mentioned, getting contributions from a guy like Trey. Didn't play a ton in this game. I think he played about a dozen snaps, but he was out there and got his hand up and did what he was supposed to do at the right time, and we were able to get the win.
You actually coached there in a playoff game?
New Orleans, yeah.
What is it about that? What are the elements of that building that make it and Breeze that make it so difficult?
Well, yeah, you can probably start with Breeze. All places are tough to play. I mean, it's playoff time. Not only do the players know what time it is, the fans know what time it is. You know, I think that, you know, there's, you know, every place is going to be difficult to play, but also has a lot to do with the quarterbacks that you're playing. We got a lot of respect for him. We're going to play our very best. All right, guys.
Did you just say you're doing
that? He's always a hard act to follow, isn't he?
Mike, Nick on third down and fourth down in those situations, his numbers, they've always been really good, but in the postseason, they've been off the charts. What is it about those situations where he's able to thrive?
I think there's a lot that's factored into that, but he's made really good decisions, and we've done an excellent job of protecting him. You know, even the other night, you know, as good a front and talent that they have in Chicago, the offensive line did an outstanding job of protecting Nick all night long, and we had guys get open. So guys are doing a good job winning their matchups out there on the perimeter, and we're giving him an opportunity to finish a throw in motion. And he's making good decisions, and he's getting the ball out of his hand quickly and giving guys the opportunity to make it.
Yesterday, Peterson said that this is a different team going into the Saints game this time around in the playoffs. I'm curious, where do you feel like the offense has improved or developed since that last meeting?
Yeah, I think we've made a lot of improvements since that last game. I think we're 6-1 since that game, and feeling good about you know, where we are offensively. Obviously, there's every week there's things that you want to improve in. And get better at based on what people try to do to you. So we know we have a tremendous challenge. They're an excellent defense. They've had a really good year and done a lot of things really well. So we're excited for it. We've created a great opportunity for ourselves to be here in the divisional round and looking forward to getting back there.
Well, first, the running game didn't pick up a lot of yardage, but play action seemed to work really effectively against the Bears. Can you speak to how that strategy can sometimes help you from an outlook in the passing game as opposed to just the yardage count that you get? Basically, play action opened up because you ran the ball. You didn't quit on the run, it seemed like. Can that sometimes be a benefit as well as opposed to just the yardage?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked you know, all season long about wanting to stay committed to the run, and we were going to do that. Like, we feel like that's when we're, you know, at our best, when we're giving the runs opportunities. And sometimes, you know, it takes a while for the runs to open up and to be impactful. So there's obviously play action passes that are married to those runs and they have an impact, like you said. So we were able to hit some of those throws down the field and change field position and create scoring opportunities.
Like the Saints that can score the amount of points they do, how do you avoid getting caught up in that pressure as an offense, feeling like you need to keep up with them?
Well, I think we want to score every time we go out. We don't go out there and saying we want to take 2 minutes off the clock. So, you know, our mindset as an offense is to go out and score.
Mike, that first Saints game got out of hand pretty quickly, which obviously changes your whole offensive game plan. Last five games, defense has done a really good job on early possessions. I think they've only given up 16 points on the first three possessions last five games. Which, how important has that been to you and maintaining the game plan you guys go into a game with?
Yeah, I think we're starting the games better now, you know, over the last six, 7 games. And, you know, we were up to that point. And conversely, like you just pointed out, I think defense is doing a really good job getting off the field, you know, early in the game. So we're able to get the lead or, you know, at least put points up and then, you know, continue from there.
Twice this year, how much does that familiarity maybe help your receivers? And is he the type of player that maybe you guys want to target in this game?
Well, I think he's played really well since he's made the, you know, transition to New Orleans. So we got a lot of respect for Eli, and he's made some really good plays. You can see him on tape and growing in confidence in that system.
On that touchdown to Tate, both Doug and Nick said Vic Fangio had kind of a tendency to be aggressive in those got to have it moments. Like, where does that information come from? Is there a scout on staff who brings that to you? Is that your guys' field study? Just what's the process of learning something like that that can help you during the game?
Just grinding on tape, exhausting the tape, and that's weekly. But that's what we're up doing, you know, early morning, late at night, and preparing and putting these plans together.
When you look at, you know, when you guys went to Wendell Smallwood, obviously, quite a bit on Sunday, and it seems like, you know, it kind of varies from week to week and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of wondering, like, how you guys figure that and also Wendell kind of provides for you guys?
Wendell played really well, you know, ran strong, you know, was able to make people miss, break some tackles. Thought he showed really good vision in the game. So he did a really nice job. You know, we let, you know, Deuce really handles really the rotation of those guys each and every week. And we got a package for all of them so that they know that they have a role in certain things. And then sometimes you feed a guy that looks like he's got a hot hand that night. It's his night and he's playing well. And you try to feature him a little bit more and keep him going. So it could go either way. But Wendell did a really good job the other night.
Let's talk on that. Josh Adams' playing time has gone down in recent weeks. Only had one snap the other day. Why is that?
You know, just like I mentioned, Zach, we had a package for Josh and, a way that we were going to use him in the game. And, you know, over the course of the game, it just didn't go that way. And, Wendell was playing well and it was one of those games where we want to make sure that Darren Sproles had every opportunity to make an impact in the game. Getting playoff time. And, if we hadn't gotten Darren in the game, you guys would be asking me why he didn't get in. So.
Going back this run, if you start in Los Angeles, it was Donald and Watt and Clowney and then Kerrigan, Khalil Mack. Doug mentioned yesterday Joe Osmond, the looks he gives you guys at practice. How important has that been in your preparation to get ready for
that? Yeah, I'm glad you asked me about Joe. He has busted his tail all season long. And he's a better player because of the way he approaches practice each and every day, embraces the number of jersey that we put on him. And like you said, we've played some excellent pass rushers over the stretch of games here. And he's usually been that guy, whether it be Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack or Jadeveon Clowney or J.J. Watt, you know, all these really great pass rushers that we've played against. And Joe has helped prepare the offensive line for that challenge, and our offensive line has risen to the challenge. I mean, you look at the way we protected the other night, it was outstanding.
What's been Carson's role, meetings and on the field, since he's not practicing?
Yeah, I mean, just like you would expect a typical backup, he's been energetic and enthusiastic and completely supportive and in Nick's corner all the way. And, you know, not only that, he's really bright. So he's got good ideas and sees the game during the course of the game. So as we all sit over there and talk about the last series or the next series, is able to interject and present some of his thoughts as well.
You mentioned the offensive line and how well they've been playing. What's been the biggest difference for them over the last few weeks?
I've said this all season long. We got a ton of confidence in our entire offensive line unit. And we just found a little bit of a groove, I guess, got some traction, and, you know, guys are playing confidently. We're playing well. They're really preparing hard and preparing smart and taking advantage of the reps that we get every day out there at practice. And we're going out there and we're executing at a high level right now.
Mike, the noise of that, do you anticipate having to use a lot of silent cameras?
Yes.
You mentioned Darren Sproles earlier, Mike. How important is his pass protection to getting him as many snaps as possible? I know he had 13 carries, a couple of receptions, but you also kept him in as a blocker several times. I mean, how big is that?
Well, I mean, all running backs, that's part of the job description. So he does a great job with it. He takes a lot of pride in it. So, I mean, we can't always put him in and get him the ball. So he's got to do some of the, you know, get his hands dirty, and he's not afraid to do that. He'll do whatever it takes. He's a complete football player. And we know that, you know, when he's got the ball in his hands, he's got a chance to make tremendous impact. So I'm going to keep featuring him.
What have you learned about Jason Peters this year that you might not have known last year?
I guess I didn't get the chance to be around him as much last year because he was injured. But, you know, by reputation, you've always heard what a tremendous player he is. And he's obviously that. And he's one of the leaders for us, not only just on offense, but throughout the entire team. And I think he's excited about playing this time of year. So it's kind of fun to see him excited like that.
Nick and Carson in this situation, I know we've asked you this kind of before, but every week it gets a little deeper. Do you have to kind of talk to Carson about, you know, we still know who you are, and, you know, it's a muddled situation a little bit.
It's muddled in what way?
Just that Nick has done so well.
Yeah.
And Carson is out of view and almost out of mind.
I don't think so. Yeah. we're not dismissing Carson around here. Like we just talked about, he's really involved on a daily basis, and you know, he's in a supporting role right now due to his injury, and he's trying to heal up and get himself ready to go. So we got a lot of confidence in Carson and the kind of player he is, and right now he's just being a really good teammate.
Mike, how did Isaac play in his return after you guys put him
back? He played really well, played solid. I mean, for missing the time they did, really did a nice job, and under the circumstances, I mean, they got a really good defensive line, and Isaac stepped up and played well.
On that every day with Dallas Goedert, when you first got him, did you expect him to get so good as an inline blocker so quickly? Just from the mere fact he wasn't asked to do it.
Yeah, I think I talked about this last week. You know, that was the one thing he wasn't really asked to do a lot of in college. You know, you could see all the skills, the ball skills that he had, and the ability to run after the catch. Those things were very apparent. But the other phase of playing tight end is being an inline blocker. And there's not many guys that can do that. So, you know, it's a credit to him. It's a credit to Justin Peel, his tight end coach, and his rapid development in that area. And he's come a long way. But he is going to be a really good inline blocking tight end for a long time.
Spent a lot of time with Doug, so it's probably hard to kind of step back and look at the maturation of your relationship. Has the more time that you spent with each other allowed you guys to kind of understand each other a little bit better and in turn help the offense?
I think it's probably fair to say, I mean, without putting any thought into it, continuity is important in this game, whether you're talking about, football in general. You know, why is the O-line? Well, the O-line's played together a lot, and the offense is playing better. We've had some continuity, get same guys in the huddle, and those things are important, and they're undervalued a lot of times and overlooked. So I think, from a complete offensive perspective, we've been able to do that and continue to grow and keep getting better.
You mentioned Goddard after the catch and that you knew he could do that, but that play he had on the winning drive down the middle, Chris Collinsworth was like really
it was a heck of a catch, wasn't
yeah.
it? I mean, down on the shoot tops like that. Yeah. Not only that, just to be able to control the ball and then, you know, spin out of a tackle and make a first down. That was a huge first down. And that drive on a second and long, I believe the play before that, you know, we had a couple guys open, got a little pressure, weren't able to get it to them, and then be able to make a first down right there on second down was critical to keeping that drive alive. So it's a really good example of Dallas stepping up. The moment is not too big for him, you know, for a rookie there in his first playoff game to make that play, and the route that he ran for the touchdown was excellent.
Who came up with it?
It came out of the run division. Yeah. So I wasn't in the run division meeting, but it came out of the run division meeting. Yeah.
What was it called?
Well, it's called London Special. Yeah. We put it in London. Yeah, all right.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.